Today we are beginning the series on the Psalms, and there are 150 different writings, poetic writings, kind of in the center of the Bible, and they each paint a very personal picture of what it means to know God. Dick and Terry's story really gives us a glimpse into that and how they experienced it. But first, before we talk about a particular psalm this morning, I want to talk a little bit about the Psalms. What are they? What are the Psalms? We know, you know, they're kind of in the middle of the Bible, but what are they? What is their purpose? Well, first, they are really original poems set to music, kind of like our first hymn book, kind of like the first time somebody tried to put everything to music and rhythm and rhyme that expresses how we feel about faith and life. They are also, this is one of my favorite things to talk about, truthful outpourings of the human experience. There is nothing candy-coated in the Psalms. They are honest, raw expressions about joy, pain, danger, love, despair, frustration, victory. It's all there. If there's something happening in your life, good or bad, you can probably find a psalm that just speaks your heart on it. What do they do? What do the Psalms do for us? Well, first, this may seem a little obvious, but they help us to pray and to worship. But if you don't know that, it's a wonderful thing to discover that the Psalms are there to be the words when we have no words, to be the story that explains our story, and to give us words to tell God thank you, to worship him for what he has done in our lives, for how he has been there. They give us the means to connect with God and say what our hearts long to say. They also do something remarkable. They invite us in to this bigger, more expanded perspective of understanding our time and God's time. And I love this picture. I want you to think about it. Our time, God's time. My time is about me, now, today. God's time is about forever. And so helping me remember my very finite life in the midst of a very infinite light, God, and who he is. That's an important thing to remember. It invites us into understanding that our space is just a small piece and part of God's space. There are things in this world and things beyond this world that we cannot see, we cannot explain, we've yet to discover, and sometimes we forget that that's all there because we're worried about what's happening in the very present around us space of today. But the Psalms invite us to remember that there's more there than meets the eye. There's more there than what we have experienced so far. And the last thing it invites us into is to have an understanding of our matter, who I am and how I am made, and God's creation. I don't know if you've experienced this, but sometimes I'm just very worried about me, myself, and I, about my own needs, my own wants, whether I get the food, whether I have the object that I desire. And there's a whole creation out there that God has created, that he has called us to be in relationship with. And so the Psalms remind us, when it says to lift our eyes up to the mountains, the Psalms remind us that there is so much more that we need to be having in our picture of daily living. N.T. Wright is one of the greatest writers of today about Christian truth and trying to help us like frame it and think through what does it mean for our lives. And he writes truthful, sincere outpourings. That's what he calls the Psalms. And when we worship the Creator God with our whole truthful self, it renews and remakes us. When we enter into the Psalms, you sang one this morning. When you enter into the Psalm, it allows you to be honest about who you are and honest with God about where you're going, and then he meets you in that place and gives you what you need and gives you the purpose and identity that you long for. That's just a quick big picture look at the Psalms. Each week we'll talk a little bit more about their purpose and how they're designed and all those things. But we wanted to just give a little intro today. And then I want us to really look at this one psalm. And I picked it because it's Labor Day weekend, and I feel like this psalm has a lot to do with who we are and what we do. So we're going to look at Psalm 139 together and see what truthful outpourings, as N.T. Wright says, that we can discover. Now, if you want to read along, if you brought a Bible and you want to read along, or if you want to read along in a Bible that's in the seat in front of you, you are welcome to do that. But because we just said that the psalms are meant to help us worship and pray together, I want us to read together this morning. And I don't want you to be afraid to use the inflection that you would use in your living room if you were just reading it out loud by yourself. You know, sometimes when we do church readings together, we go da-da, 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 and we all try to like hit all the same spots. And that's great because it feels like it's in unison, but I want you to feel like it's your words this morning. So don't worry about your neighbor. Don't worry if you're off by a syllable or something. Read it with some of your emotion and your intensity and intentionality of what it means for you. So here we go. We're going to read verses 1 through 12 together first. You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me, your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me, and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. Just take those words in. Let them settle for a few quiet moments. Here's my summary of verses 1 through 6. Are you ready? You know me. 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 Am I on 6? You know me. He knows us. He perceives. He gets us. He understands. He knows us. And if there is something I learned in my years of youth ministry that applied to students but also really applies to all of us, there are three important questions that we always encouraged parents and students to really identify in their life that they need to be able to answer to get through adolescence. But you know what? We actually need to ask these questions to get through life. Three questions, really important ones. Who am I? Do I matter? And do I belong? Teens and tweens, I know you guys are out there this morning. These are questions that are most important for you because it's probably the first time you've been asking them. My guess would be that whenever you hit a bump in the road of adolescence, whenever you're at some kind of crossroads, you're probably wrestling with one of those three questions. And if you can just take a step back and go, wait, let's just say the question is, who am I? And you ask yourself, am I trying to be like everyone else because I don't quite know who I uniquely am yet and I'm trying to explore that? You're a little ahead of the game if you can ask yourself that question. If your parents can help you process through those questions, that's an important part of adolescence, to be able to say, who am I? And do I matter? And do I belong in some kind of community that makes a difference for my life? But you know what? Whether you're in college or you're in your career or you're off to retirement, in every new season of our life, in every new decade, we probably have to revisit the questions and answer them again. I had a middle school student. His name was Saxon. There may be a few people in here who knew him. He came every Wednesday night with a ridiculous amount of energy. He was fun and joyful, and he could not be quiet. One week, I was trying to lead a lesson, and every time I glanced his way, he was whispering to the neighbor on this side, poking the friend on that side, and basically distracting every person around him. And I had had it. So I decided to teach him a lesson that night, and I called him out. Not a great youth ministry tool, by the way, especially when it backfires on you like it did. And I challenged him to repeat everything I had just said. And he did. And he did not miss one detail, not one. So I learned that day that the energetic, can't sit still or stop talking kind of student really is not trying to subvert my spiritual teaching. They're just wired for exuberance. A couple years ago, I ran into Saxon's mom at Target. She could not wait to tell me that he had landed a job at Red Bull. God knew what he was doing. I'm really glad I caught on before I discouraged him too much. And I realized that that exuberance could be channeled and directed. No matter what age you are, though, Psalm 139 tells us that our identity is rooted in God. He knows us. He gets us. David Brenner, in his book called The Gift of Being Yourself, which I highly recommend, says an identity grounded in God would mean that when we think of who we are, the first thing that would come to mind is our status as someone who is deeply loved by God. Is that the first thing you think of? When you think of who you are, is the first thing that comes to mind, I am deeply loved by God. I don't think that I do that very well yet. Oh, if every one of us could really, really believe and live into that every day, if we could just constantly hold on to that kind of sacred identity, we are known. Deeply loved. He gets us. So my summary of verses 7 through 12, you're there, and there, over there, and yes, even there. You're going to have this whole passage memorized just with my four little words this morning before you leave. His presence never leaves us. He never leaves or forsakes us. He's loved us with an everlasting love. He just doesn't go away. When I decided in second grade that I wanted to follow Jesus, and I really had no idea what that meant, he was there. When I started my senior year at my third high school, he was there. When I met Gary McKinney, and I knew I liked him, but I refused to admit it for quite some time, he was there. When I mourned my first and my second miscarriage, he was there. When I held Lainey in Garrison for the very first time, he was most definitely there. When I visited my 100-year-old grandmother for the last time, and she kept asking, "Now who are you?" He was there. When I make a remarkable mess of my life, he's there. When I led the funeral for a 6-week-old little girl who was born with half a heart 2 years ago, he was there. And in the midst of the last 3 years of my life, which I would say probably in some ways has been the most difficult, God has been there. That scripture, Jeremiah 31:3, "I have loved you with an everlasting love." God's time, my time. God's space, God's space. I shouldn't mess that up. My time, God's time. My space, God's space. My matter, his creation. He invites us in to know something bigger than ourselves. David Benner also says, "I'm convinced that God loves each and every one of us with depth, persistence, and intensity beyond imagination. We cannot even imagine how deeply he loves us, and how far he will go to pursue us with that love. we just cannot even imagine. And when we think we have imagined enough, we discover at some point in our life we have not even remotely scratched the surface. Oh, if we could leave this place today and believe that no matter where we go, God is in it with us. Okay, so let's read the next few verses together. This is going to be verses 13 through 18. Remember, this is part of a prayer. So read it like you mean it. Here we go. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I will praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. How precious to me are your thoughts, God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you. Purpose. We've talked about identity. We've talked about God's presence. What about purpose? This is probably the most famous part of this psalm. If you've heard about it before, if you've read a devotion, you might have seen a phrase like created for a purpose or other memorable bylines. But I want to go back to that word we talked about earlier that I ask you to hold on to and to think about. I want to talk about vocation. Now, what do you think about when you think of vocation? Do you think about your job, a career, what you were trained to do professionally? Possibly. But it's much more than that. Vocation is something that you're called to do. It might be your job, but it might not be. Here's a way to describe it. Vocation is knowing that you are fearfully and wonderfully made for something bigger than yourself. I'm gonna say that again. Vocation is knowing that you are fearfully and wonderfully made for something bigger than yourself. Now, you may be nodding your head and saying, yep, Denise, the school or job that I go to every morning is a huge pile of more stuff than I can get done or keep up with or manage. It's actually not what I'm talking about. But if you think about what vocation really means, it might help you with that little dilemma. If God knows us from the inside out and he's everywhere with us, there must be a reason, right? I think it's because he has a very specific, sacred job for each of us that he needs us to get done. And it can get done in our jobs. It can get done outside of our jobs. It can get done in our homes, with our friends, or in our community. But we are called to something. The question is, who has he wired you to be? So for me, I have figured out that I truly am a connector. Now, it's very convenient at this stage of my life, that's actually a part of my job title too. But everything that I do, I have discovered, is rooted in a deep desire to help people connect with God and to each other through friendship, truth, serving, sacrifice, music, teaching, introducing. I live for that. You may work as a medical professional, but your vocation might be healer, crisis leader, or health preserver. You may be doing the engineer job, but your vocation might be problem solver or practical specialist. I'm trying to be really creative with these titles here, because you help us keep things practical and doable. Your job right now might be as a student, but I promise you that your vocation is forming. And God is shaping you to be someone, to go to a place that where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. That's vocation. The place that God calls us to is the place where our deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. Whether you're 15 or 50, when we answer the question, who has he wired us to be? If we do that first, The 9-to-5 job usually takes on a more missional purpose. We then realize that if we're meant to do the role of engineer, sales, marketing, student, doctor, service, lawyer, we know what we're supposed to do in that job because we know our vocation. Here's just a couple of quick examples of people that I know and that some of you may know who I think have really realized their vocation. First, Jay and Jan Weinheimer here at Redeemer. They tell me that when they thought about what to do in retirement, that they decided to retire to something, not from something. I love that. They combined their love for camping and traveling, and now their vocation is as nomads. So it's a fun title, but it also goes along with a ministry called Nomads. It's a traveling ministry that builds, remodels, and repairs churches and children's homes, camps, colleges, outreach missions, and disaster rebuilding. They travel, do something they love, and they live into a vocation of service. When they're home, their vocation is advocates. They work at Tulsa Hills Youth Ranch, serving there and representing children in the foster care system through CASA as court-appointed advocates. Tiffany Smiling grew up at Redeemer, went to our student ministry. When she was 10, she was diagnosed with one of the rarest forms of brain cancer, and she underwent 4 brain surgeries and radiation treatment at St. Jude's. Her 8-year battle with this terminal disease, which ended up not being terminal, helped her discover her vocation. When I look at what she has done on her journey, I like to call Tiffany an entrepreneurial rescuer. She owned and ran the Orange Leaf Frozen Yogurt at 81st and Harvard in college. She bought it, ran it, staffed it, went to school. I bet a lot of us have been there. And then she used that enterprise to launch her current foundation, With All My Heart is the name of it, and it uses business and imagination to rescue impoverished children in desperate places in the world. She's done all that, and she's still in her 20s. I would say that Tiffany knows her vocation. Who has he wired you to be? It's a great question to answer. I hope you'll think about it today. I want to read this last part of Psalm 139 to you because I want you to hear the raw honesty with which this person is talking to God. It's kind of a hard right turn in this passage. In verse 19, it starts, "If only you, God, would slay the wicked. Away from me, you who are bloodthirsty. They speak of you with evil intent. Your adversaries misuse your name. Do I not hate those who hate you, Lord, and abhor those who are in rebellion against you? I have nothing but hatred for them. I count them my enemies. Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." His power is there and available to us. So think about this. Some of those last verses are way off of what we heard earlier in the psalm. They take a very different attitude, kind of shift courses. And here's, I think, what is the beautiful truth about that. We can truly tell God anything. Even if it's not our nicest, most polite self, especially if we do as the psalm writer does in the last 2 verses and say, you know what, that's how I really feel right now. Meet me in my thoughts today, attitudes and my behaviors, and take me where you want me to go, God, but this is where I am, and I need you to be in this moment, right here, right now, with me. His power is available for us to discover that we are known by him, pursued by him, and purposed by him. Known by him, pursued by him, and purposed by him. He sees what you're up against every day, and he would be ecstatic to guide you in that and show you who you are and what your vocation is. And just to make clear that the Bible tends to be very consistent in the messages from Old Testament to New, Ephesians 2:10. For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. So here's the question we end with today. How do I get there? How do I get to this understanding of who I am and my vocation and what I'm supposed to do? According to Mr. Greenlee, in their journey with Oklahoma Pumps, he said, by saying yes to what is right in front of you, give him your little, and he will make it much. Let's pray. God, search us. Remind us that you know us. Wherever we are on the journey of faith today, whether we think we're in a good place or not, meet us there. Help us to understand who you have wired us to be, how our identity is rooted in you, and from that identity, we understand what we're supposed to do every day. This is the greatest calling. Help us to not miss it. In your name.